Well, Advent is here, and if you're like me, there's a little tiny bit of panic that starts to creep in right now. Am I going to get everything done? Am I going to get all the things done? But today we want to enter in to Advent in a spiritual way. And this season, our teaching series is built around the song, O Come, Emmanuel. That's one of the oldest Christmas carols that we have. In fact, it's probably the oldest. There's parts of it that date back to the 6th or 7th century, if you can believe that. And each week we're going to look at a different verse from the song as a jumping off point for the teaching and for the message. So we thought we would just sing it together before Brad comes and opens the word for us. So let's sing this together.
O come, Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel, that mourns in lonely exile here, until the Son of God appear. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee, O
everyone. My name's Brad. As Kevin said, our series for these weeks leading towards Christmas, the season of Advent, is based upon the carol that we just sang the first verse of. If you are familiar with the carol, there are many verses, more verses than there are weeks to Advent this year. All of the verses proclaim the magnificence of the Messiah who people in Jesus' time had been waiting on for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. One of the verses proclaims that the Messiah would be the branch of Jesse, a small, unexpected shoot come up out of what had looked like a dead stump, a small shoot that would become like a powerful, strong, mighty rod that would strike down all evil, and even Satan himself. Another one of the verses talks about the coming Messiah as the bright morning star, so incredibly brilliant that it has the power to disperse the gloomy clouds of night. And December can be a time of gloomy clouds settling upon individuals, families, whole communities, and our whole world. One of the verses proclaims that the Messiah is the desire of all nations, that in the midst of warring peoples, the satisfaction of all peoples that could unite the hearts of all mankind. And the verse we just sang proclaims to us that the Messiah would in fact be Emmanuel, God with us in life's darkest experiences. These soaring promises have power to renew our hearts, to make us strong and courageous people in stressful times. But if you're familiar with the Advent story, you know that's a story of a God who comes into our midst in a way that's unexpected. The Messiah is a king, and so some of us wear purple through the season of Advent, the very light purple. He is a king, but he comes in hiddenness. He is not a king in the way that everyone is expecting a king to come. So even those people expecting, longing for, praying for a king to come, most of them did not recognize his coming in to the world. Some of them, like King Herod, were evil people who resisted the coming of the king. He was just protecting his own turf, his own stuff. But that's not the case for most people. Most people were just too busy trying to survive. And they did not have eyes to see the manner in which this king would come. And so it is for us, even those of us who know the story. It's possible for us to be so caught up in the news cycle and so caught up in survival and so caught up in even good things like hosting family and friends. It's possible to be so caught up in all of these things that we miss the coming king in our lives. But for all who had eyes to see in the ancient story, well, there was an anchor of stability that those people received. And they became, for the world around them, a source of hope and a source of life. And you and I both know that our world needs that sort of hope and life more than it ever has. And that's my prayer for us all, wherever you're coming from on the spiritual journey, that in the midst of the busyness of December, that God would form in us a longing, an intention to wait upon the King who comes in hiddenness, that we might be stabilized, that we might be strengthened, that we might be a source of healing and hope to people who are all around us. The carol tells us, first and foremost, about the God who knows our deepest sorrow. Ponder with me the words again that we just sang. Come, Emmanuel, ransom captive Israel that mourns in lonely exile. Carol speaks to us about the reality of sorrow in our lives. And I think it's one of the reasons why this carol endures for centuries and centuries. It names something that we all experience regardless of how much money we have. No amount of success, no amount of money can keep us from grief, mourning, sorrow. The mourning that is spoken of in verse 1 of the carol is due to Israel's exile. This happened way back in the 6th century BC, so hundreds of years before the time of Christ. Israel was violently expelled. They were deported from their own land by people more powerful than themselves. Exile for them was a historical moment that reshaped their story and their national and individual consciousness. But exile for us is also a powerful metaphor. It's a metaphor for the reality of the power of sin in the world. It's a metaphor for the reality that you and I are always wrestling with powers that have the capacity to confine us in prisons of fear. Some of those powers might be intrusive thoughts, worrisome thoughts, or anxious thoughts, or angry thoughts that we cannot get a grip on. Sometimes those powers are addictive and reactive behaviors, just patterns. It seems like I'm just like in this power pattern that has a momentum to itself. It's just the way me and people in my family respond to pressure. In the Advent giving campaign, which you'll hear about later toward the end of the service, there is still global and political conflict all around the world that holds people in prisons of fear. I wonder, as we come to the month of December, if you are aware of the sorrow and mourning of exile that you are most in touch with. Even as we're buying gifts and, you know, collecting food for friends, I wonder if you're in touch with the reality that all our lives are touched by the sorrow of exile. For those of us who are in tune with that reality, we find a spiritual companion in the New Testament character of Joseph. So let me read the first couple of verses about his story. Beginning in Matthew chapter 1, verse 18, It says, now the birth of Jesus the Messiah took place in this way. When his mother Mary had been engaged to Joseph, but before they lived together, she was found to be with child from the Holy Spirit. Her husband Joseph, being a righteous man and unwilling to expose her to public disgrace, planned to dismiss her quietly. Now, if you're familiar with this story, those words can kind of sweep over you. But I would just point out that this is an exceedingly sad story. Joseph is the victim of exile in two ways. He is part of Israel's story. He's part of a land that's been stolen, people who've been oppressed and had their wealth taken from them. And then, in addition to that, Joseph is experiencing his own personal kind of exile. In a life of great desolation, he experiences finally a ray of hope. In a cold world, he will know the warmth of love and family with a wife named Mary. In a world of hopeless circumstances, he has the opportunity to leave a legacy, a family, children, in a traditional world. But then he learns that Mary is pregnant. And the ray of hope that had given light into his life, well, it was most certainly extinguished, his heart crushed by the pain of betrayal, of anger, shame, and sorrow. The text tells us of great inner wrestling in the life of Joseph. It says that he's a righteous man. In his anger, he could have been vengeful, but he resists that impulse. He chooses not to make a public spectacle of Mary, but remember, this is a tiny little Jewish village. Even though he's not going to make a public spectacle of her, everyone will know that she's had a child out of wedlock. She will be the victim of incredible derision. Nevertheless, he plans to set her aside quietly. It's the best he can do in a lousy situation. Joseph is in exile twofold. The carol that we sang calls God's people to rejoice even in the midst of the mourning and sorrow of exile, because it tells us that in our moments of sorrow, in our moments of vexation, in the problems that we cannot solve, God is indeed present and at work. God has not abandoned us. And so it says in verse 20, that just when he had resolved to do this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary as your wife, for the child conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will bear a son. You are to name him Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. Don't put her away. Don't flee this threatening situation. Joseph, in this dream, hears the angelic proclamation, the great proclamation that's given over and over and over throughout salvation history. Do not be afraid, Joseph. And I wonder how many of us here need to hear that proclamation today. Do not be afraid. For him, it meant do not be afraid of what people will say about you. Do not be afraid of the shame they cast upon you. Do not be afraid of anything that they can do to you. Do not be afraid of the vulnerability of love. Because in this dark situation, God says, I am here. I am with you. I am for you. And in a unique way, I will do something to undo evil, to forgive people's sins beyond your wildest imagination. It's so great that God intervenes into Joseph's pain, but it really does put him in a pickle, doesn't it? It places him in a tremendous fork in the road. It complicates his life immensely. Now Joseph has a choice to make. He is at a fork in the road. He has a choice to make. He could take an easier path. He could take the path of self-preservation. And no one would blame him for it. People would think, in fact, that he's even more righteous, that he's even more virtuous. He could take the painless path. And yet in his inner being, he's received this whisper from an angel that there is another way to go. Can he trust God, even when the promise comes only as a whisper? Can he trust God, even if it's going to be costly? Will he trust God, even if it means suffering? Joseph chooses the pathway of faith. He shelters Mary. He shelters Jesus. And so he becomes, for us all, a saint, an exemplar of the way of faith. Joseph models the central virtue of Advent. The central virtue of Advent is the virtue of waiting upon God. Not passively just waiting for God to solve the solution, but along the way, being present to God, listening for God, waiting for God to speak. In a time of darkness, Joseph models a posture of waiting that's marked by great courage. He obeys God, even though it's the harder path by far. He's showing us what it means to be a person of faith. Joseph's posture of waiting is marked by patience. Think about Joseph's life. When is he vindicated? When is he sure that God's promise will come true for him? Well, along the way, we know that he has moments where it seems like God probably is at work. The shepherds come, you know, the magi come. He keeps receiving these dreams. But they nevertheless call forth for him patient endurance. In one way, I think we could say he's never certain that God is going to come through for him. The death and resurrection of Jesus are our ultimate confirmation, and Joseph does not live to see that. And yet he lives a life of patient endurance. Joseph's waiting posture is marked by attentiveness to the Holy Spirit. Joseph keeps receiving guidance from angels. And sometimes it seems like the angels come in this mighty presence, but sometimes it's just in a dream. Like you would have thought, did that happen? Was that God? And could I stake my life on that? Joseph moves his whole family to Egypt and then back home from Egypt, and he settles in his hometown in response to just faint whispers of what it is that God is guiding him towards. Joseph models courage, patience, and attentiveness to God. And in Advent, it is God's intention to birth these virtues in our hearts as well, as we learn, like Joseph, to wait in God's presence in the midst of situations that seem otherwise unsolvable to us. Like Joseph, there are almost always two paths before us, a path of self-preservation where we could just take care of ourselves and do away with things quietly, and then a posture of faith, of trust in God evidenced by stillness and attentiveness. Advent, in the midst of everything else we have going on, these short weeks are a season for forging an intention to wait upon God in the space where we receive from God the strength of a kind of inward steel. that makes us steady and strong in a chaotic world and makes us a source of hope to others. My encouragement to us all is to think about the life of Joseph and to think of Joseph-like people in our lives that show us the way of faith-filled waiting upon God. Joseph is an interesting character. He is a compelling character to me. Yet there is a way in which we don't actually know that much about Joseph. There's just a few lines about him, and then he sort of disappears from the narrative. And the story happened so long ago, you almost never read books about Saint Joseph, so it's like hard to attach ourselves to them. So let me bring to memory another story that I think is a Joseph-like person. Her name is called Matushka Olga. Matushka is a Russian word. It's talking about a mother figure. Matushka Olga is the first North American woman to be canonized as a saint in the Orthodox Church. The Orthodox Church recognized her as a saint just in 2023, Matushka Olga having died in 1979. I love this image of Matushka Olga because it seems so ordinary, and she looks a little bit like one of my grandmothers, you know? I think it's a beautiful thing. She's an indigenous Alaskan woman of the Yupik tribe. She was the wife of a village postmaster, and as was the case in rural Alaska, her village postmaster husband was also a priest in the Orthodox Church. Matushka Olga was a mother of 8 children, and she suffered the loss of, I think, 5 other children along the way. So she was a person familiar with the experience of grief. She was a person of little wealth, and yet she was known as a person of generosity towards many. She was always making something for others, making food or making something artistic for others. And then vocationally, she was a midwife for poor indigenous women. Now, you know, in our current world today, a midwife is a nice add-on, something extra to have. Even in the 1970s in rural Alaska, a midwife would be the only help you had. So Matushka Olga was a healer, a wisdom figure, a person whose body was surrounded by the wisdom of God. And in addition to being a midwife, she was also known as a healing presence for many who suffered abuse. And if you know the stories of indigenous peoples all over the world, for many reasons, are subject to abuse. Matushka Olga is a Joseph-like character to me because her vocation was not a vocation born of superior intellect. And her vocation was not born of what we think of as superhuman power. She didn't have a magic wand she waved over people to make them well. Hers was a vocation of waiting and of teaching others how to wait on God as well. Her vocation as a midwife formed her as a person who could face chaos in a spirit of calm, calming herself and calming others as well. It formed her as a person who could be fully present to pain, not fixing pain for others, but accompanying other people in the midst of their pain. Being a midwife formed her as a person who knew how to move with the Spirit of God in life-giving ways. And so she lived as an instrument of God's compassion and healing power. And when she died in 1979, in November, would have been very, very cold in Alaska. And yet, men and women from miles and miles around walked to her village to honor her life and then also her death. And her story inspires us, as Joseph's story does, that it is not extraordinary individuals that are God's blessing to the world around them, but ordinary people who are familiar with the experience of waiting upon God in hidden places, who are familiar with the God who presents himself in power and in kindness in small, hidden places. Matushka Olga shows us that each and every one of us and ourselves as a whole community can be agents of hope and healing in our world, in our neighborhoods, in our families, in our workplaces, inasmuch as we learn to wait upon God. If you were here when Michelle did the announcements, that's our Advent practice, to wait for the dawn. And I would like to encourage you to set some intention to do that on a regular basis. At risk of being pushy, let me just say that if you only do it when you feel like it, you likely won't do it very often. And if you only choose to do it, say, once a week, Advent will be over in the blink of an eye. Advent this year is only like 3.5 weeks. So I want to encourage you, I want to challenge you, I want to challenge us to be a people who do the most un-Silicon Valley-like thing we could possibly do, to wake up and do nothing in the presence of the God who can do all things. This is a countercultural task. It's a prophetic task. It's a hard task for us because we like to be problem solvers and we like to think we can make a difference in the world. This is a hard ask for us because it may bring us in contact with deep-seated frustration or sorrow or even anger. But the promise is, even if we are distracted and even if we come in contact with deep emotion that is disturbing to us, God will be present and he will come to you as sure as the coming of the dawn. He has revealed himself to us in the person we call Emmanuel, reminding us over and over again that God is with us. And he's not just hanging out with us, though he is doing that, but he is at work to do something in you that only he could do. So let's give God in this season our time and our attention. Let me say a few words about how waiting can become meaningful, and then I just want to lead us into an experience. We're going to do this every Sunday of this Advent season. So this is all basic. If you're an expert waiter, you know, you could just relax in this. But if you're anxious about it, waiting becomes meaningful as we bring our deep longing in the presence of God. That's to say, we bring our whole hearts. You might have a problem like Joseph did, a frustration that's unsolvable, or a sorrow that nobody else in your community understands. Or you might not really have a problem in this season. You might just be longing for a deeper experience of God. Maybe you've never encountered the presence of God. This would be your first one. Bring your whole heart before God. There is a short liturgy in the booklet. It's just a couple of Bible verses. And you can say those words sort of like training wheels that guide you into the silent presence of God. So don't do a Bible study on those verses. Don't get out a commentary. Just let them lead you into the presence of God. And then rest in that space as the dawn comes into view. Don't try to make anything happen. You can't make the sun come up. Don't try to make a spiritual experience for yourself. Just open your heart to the warmth of God's love and the tenderness of his embrace. As distractions arise, and they will most likely arise, simply entrust them to the faithful hands of God and turn your attention to him again and again. And as the sun fills your awareness, let the dawning of the sun speak hope to your heart. And then at whatever time you choose, close in a word of thanksgiving. Let's do that now together. I want to invite the worship team to come. the lights will go out in a little bit, and then there will be a video that comes that sort of simulating the rising of the sun. But take a moment and just close your eyes to help you be attuned to what you are carrying in your heart. It might seem huge. It might seem like many smaller things. Give your whole heart to God in this season. And now as the words to Psalm 130 come on the screen, let's say these words and then enjoy just a few moments of silence. I wait for the Lord, my soul waits, and in his word I hope. My soul waits for the Lord more than those who watch for the morning, more than those who watch. Be in stillness. Enjoy the presence of God.